Proving marketing effectiveness enables marketers to grow brands, build businesses, and get more budgets. But what are some of the ways to convince business that marketing is a major contributor? The CMO of Sanlam Retail Mass, Mandy Satekokitsan, seems to have cracked the code.
Don't be shy to include the business measurements in a marketing landscape. Don't be afraid to include the cost of acquisition, the cost of reach. Those things keep you honest. Those things also help you challenge the business on what it costs to create the value that you create.
We also talk about balancing short-term wins with long-term brand growth.
I think as marketers, it's important to not make a choice between the two. For me, it's never been short-term wins or the long-term goals. It's both.
Right.
So the challenge is, how do you invest in both and how do you give attention to both? And so for me, I'm going to give you a little bit of short-term wins because I'm buying some emotional trust from you as a business and as an executive team, because these are the things that are going to set us up for the long term.
To get more insights like these ones, subscribe to The Lead Creative and tell us who you'd like to hear from. If you'd like to support our work or keep us fueled until the next episode, check the link in the description below and buy us some coffee.
Welcome to The Lead Creative Podcast, where we talk to creative industry leaders, influencers, and brands. We discuss the strategies that influence brand thinking and shape industries. Thought leaders and heads of agencies let us in on some of their thinking and insights. I'm your host, Mongezi Mthathi. Enjoy the show, and please share and subscribe.
Mandisa, as we start, if you could make a choice between working with unlimited data but no creativity, or unlimited creativity but no data, what would you choose?
It would have to be unlimited data. So it's important for me to have access to information, to have access to data points, numbers. Those are the things that keep me excited. I am unfortunately not a creative person, which is very hard to say as a marketer. But I definitely know how to make the numbers tell a beautiful story. So it would always be unlimited data.
Right. And how much do you think that would sort of take you down the road of engaging better with your customers without having the creative side, but only the data?
Numbers can be creative too. You also, you need to be able to tell a different story. And for me, especially when it comes to our customers, we need to know what they want. We need to know how they think, what's worked, what hasn't worked. And for us, you can only get that kind of insight from the data. The communities that you serve, and the problems are not the same, you know. So I think data, for me, it almost gives you a map of where to go, what didn't work, who's there. And that is also a beautiful story. And that can also be creative because it tells you the journey you have taken. It tells you the various stories of your communities that you serve, the customers, and how to better be a better brand for them. So the numbers can also be creative.
So you've worked across big brands from financial services, banking to retail. How do you measure the impact of creativity and marketing in driving business outcomes? Because a lot of the time we have these really big campaigns, we do this massive marketing work, this heavy lifting, but measuring the impact sometimes, especially to business outcomes, becomes a bit of a challenge. What have you found to help you in understanding that impact, or at least being able to measure it?
I think the measurement is different, right? And it depends on what conversation and context you're in. So for the business, they're always looking for the numbers. And mm-hmm. I always like to shy away starting with the numbers as a business. The first thing you want to make sure is that, are we visible? Can our customers see us? And can they see themselves in our brand? And a lot of that requires a lot of quantitative research, right? So you need to invest in actually finding out what they think about your brand, what they think about your business, and do they see themselves in it? So in order to get to understand the numbers, you need to be invested in understanding what the story that you're going to get out of the environment that you're in. So it's a mix of, from a business perspective, it's the sales, right? It's the NPS score. From a brand perspective, it's the brand sentiment, etc. But for me, the things that truly matter is the impact you've made in the customers' lives. That requires you wanting to be in your communities, wanting to have real conversations with them, and actually being open to the uncomfortable truths that they may share. So they may also share what isn't working about your business, what isn't working about your brand. And so you need to be open to a two-way conversation, and more so you've been open to hearing from your customers. And so that's the part that I don't think a lot of brands invest in. We spend some time looking for the vanity KPIs. You know, our brand sentiment has gone up. Our sales have gone up. And the numbers will be there. But it's the instantaneousness of the numbers that the business wants. It's also the instant gratification that us as marketers want. We also want you to see it and be wowed and be like, wow, the most amazing campaign. I love it. It's sold. You also kind of need to be married to the journey. And that it's going to take time, and that you are constantly on a journey with your customers, constantly on a journey as a business. And I think put in milestones that will confirm you on the right track, and be open to pivoting and transcending your brand, and also moving out of communities that you don't serve and entering communities that you do bigger and better. So be open to where your customers actually are and where they want you, rather than we have 65 million billboards everywhere, they all love us, and that's not what you're going to get.
So here's the thing, right? From the perspective of a customer, and I'm not sure how you resolve this. I'm sure you have an answer for it. From a customer's perspective, sometimes let's use insurance, because this is, you know, an area that you're working largely in at the moment. So in insurance, a lot of the time I pay my premiums, but the insurance company only really realizes that there was a problem when I'm about to switch. And then they try to retain me as a customer. But on a normal day, for 3 or 5 years, for however long I'm paying the premiums, it's difficult to know how happy I am with you as my insurer. And yet when the time comes, when I say, okay, let's break up, you're like, no, let's try to keep you. How do you know? How do you measure that impact over time? Because, I mean, it's difficult, not just in insurance, it's difficult in retail, it's difficult everywhere you go, right? People switch stores all the time. People switch insurers all the time. And you can't really know as retail store A that a customer's unhappy with me until they've switched. How do you know and maintain these customer relationships over time?
So you definitely need to change the way that you look at your customer journeys, right? So usually we invest in onboarding, and then, as you say, you're about to leave, so then the business tries to retain you. So we usually focus a lot of our efforts on the acquisition and on the retention. And a lot of the gap actually sits in the in-between, which is in the entire relationship. So the relationship management while you have the customer. And I think that's why you see the importance of CX, right? Because CX makes you it forces you to relook the entire value chain, not just from the moment you get the customer, of everything it takes to get the customer, and what are we going to do when the customer wants to leave. It's everything in between. So for example, we need to change the way that we look at our customers and say, once we have Mongezi in the house, we need to, how do we keep Mongezi on a journey with us? But we also need to be invested on the journey that Mongezi's on. So Mongezi joins us. He joins us at a particular time in his life. Mongezi is going to progress. Mongezi is going to have milestones. His life stage is going to change. And how are we going to show up as a business at all of these life stages so that we're continuously building a relationship, right? And there's small low-hanging fruit, right? Everyone says, oh, the business sent me a happy birthday. No one wants just a happy birthday. They want some money with it. So how do you infuse your rewards program into that, into just re-galvanizing your relationship with Umongezi? And it's as simple as a relationship that we have in Jolweni on an everyday basis. Just because you got the girl, you don't stop. I mean, it's all the effort you did to get the girl. You took her on dates, you got her flowers. And then just before she's about to break up, you do the exact same thing. Oh, I'll be better, I'll do better. But it's that consistency in between that's actually important. Yeah. Make sure that you continuously are taking the girl out on a date. Make sure you're continuously bringing her flowers if that's what she likes. And I think we kind of need to look at our customer relationships the same. So what are the things that our customers are invested in? What are the things that matter to them? How do we use the data points that we have access to, right? So we already know that you've bought a car because we can see a vehicle and asset finance loan has been taken out. What are we doing to support Mongezi on that journey? Are we sending a congratulations? We must be there to support you on the milestones that you are achieving. True. You know, so how do you, it's literally about bringing all of the data points that you have and using it into a relationship journey. For example, if we are going to be sponsoring an event in Ekastin Lako, why aren't we inviting you first? Right? Because we know you love these kind of things. And I think it's just about bringing all the things, because every department is doing something. So how do you bring all of these things together to create a beautiful ecosystem that allows you to keep your relationship with your client going and motivated? Because if I create a channel where you can engage with us and or we create engage with you, it also allows you to have an opportunity to engage with us, right? Because then you tell me what you want. You tell us how you like things and how you don't like things. Actually, don't WhatsApp me. Email me. I actually prefer phone calls on a Friday, but it seems like we just throw our things at our customers. We don't allow them to tell us all the what time. They want.
Yeah.
So and it's I about think you meant, I mean, there are channels as well.
Yeah, there are a few things there. I suppose that the customer journey is an ecosystem. I think that is a very important thing, and customer experience as well. I mean the. Our team at Roger Wilco does the customer experience report, and financial services incidentally performs better than many other sectors in customer experience because the sector looks at and takes care of the many touch points that they have with customers. Something else that you said there, which I really like, is this idea of being creative over time, right? This creativity that you kind of put in there. And it's one of these things that as a marketer, as a CMO, you fight for all the time. This is what I hear all the time from CMOs and from an agency side. That's what they tell us whenever we say, yeah, but maybe let's tweak this here. Let's do this there. Let's be more creative in this way. You have to go back and convince your board that this is what needs to happen. Why is it that at that level, at that executive level, creativity needs to be fought for when it clearly provides so much value?
I mean, I think the board has the difficult task of caring about the shareholder, right? And so they're always trying to make sure that they generate as much value for the shareholder, because in order to generate value, the first question becomes at what cost. So I don't want to be difficult and unfair to the boards and say they don't value creativity. It's that their mandate is to ensure the value for the shareholder is always maintained and protected. That's their job. I mean, they do that job really, really well, which is why they hold us to such a high standard. I think what it comes down to as a CMO is you have the heavy task of showing and proving the touch points. So you need to be able to tell the story really well, be able to show what the creativity has done in terms of the numbers and the value that is created, and use that to tell a story. I think it's also around creating trust with your board so that they trust your decision making, they trust your pivoting, and they trust the journey that you're on. And that takes very similar to what we just spoke about, a relationship. So yes. You need to be able to say you're creating a relationship with your board, and it's not an us and them. They're there to protect the shareholders' value, and you're there to to galvanize creativity and to take the business to the next level. So where you can, use the data to help you tell a story. And I think what a lot of boards won't fight you is if you have the data to support you.
But if you have a great idea...
Great ideas, you need to be able to say what values are going to be able to create, what values are going to generate, and. And so just be open to creating a relationship with your board and talk to the things that they're there to protect, right? So you know they're there to protect the shareholders' value. So what is how is this idea going to help and grow the value for the shareholder? And that becomes your starting point. It's not about how dope the idea is how much value is it going to bring and how what needle is it going to move. That's kind of how you position your conversation.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
So after doing all of this heavy lifting and all of this creative work for a long time, such as, you know, Sanlam and Ashupal have, there was this recent acquisition of Ashupal by Sanlam, which brings together two established brands. You talk about, I guess, you know, brand building, creativity, building this trust, and both brands had built this trust. And then now this acquisition comes into play. In your view, how do you think Sanlam, with its long heritage, and Ashupal with its deep community reach, kind of come together in the customer's mind to make this work in the market?
I mean, I think it's going to add value for our customers on multiple levels. So let's start with the side of our business, right? So Ashupal is as old as Sanlam. I think one is a few years older than the other, which I think is Sanlam is a little bit older. You also have the fact that Ashupal is entrenched in the community. So let's start with the size of the businesses. So we have a very similar model in terms of Ashupal and Sanlam. And in this acquisition, you now have the biggest financial services partner in the insurance space, specifically in the mass market. So now we have the benefit of size, and we have the benefit of dominance, which is great. The second thing that we now have is you have Ashupal, which has an amazing, like you said, deep community brand that is so entrenched. And that is something that we as Sanlam want to benefit from. You know, part of the synergy of the businesses is taking what's good about the other business. It's not about, we bought you or we acquired you, so we're going to just use whatever worked for us. It's a matter of bringing two amazing businesses and brands together, and how do we become this new business and brand? Because that's what we've actually done with this integration. We've allowed it to give us introspection as Sanlam, and also say what's worked about Ashupal that we want to keep. Because when you buy something, it's important that you keep the things that worked. You know, so it's not a matter of we're going to take away this. It's a matter of elevating who we are now. So we are this big dominant brand that's now going to be able to also have this community deepened entrenchment that we want to have as Sanlam. But we also have this value of the size and dominance of Sanlam and the depth and breadth of Sanlam, because we are part of the Sanlam group where we have access to short term, we have access to retirement annuities, we have so many partners in the Sanlam group. And so we want to be able to bring that into one beautiful business that then transcends into this beautiful brand. And how do we communicate that brand into our customers?
So a lot of interesting things have happened in recent times. In fact, as you talk about Ashupal, I'm reminded that I used to see a lot of Ashupal ads when we had a handful of limited TV channels, when there was only sort of terrestrial television. And there wasn't, you know, there wasn't streaming as we now do it. Now, with this change in the ecosystem, especially the marketing and advertising ecosystem, because we now stream and we now avoid advertising. How do you then kind of win the consumer's mind, a consumer who probably doesn't stream as much, probably doesn't watch as much TV in a time when advertising in air quotes has become so noisy? How do you win back that attention in a time when you can't, in a time when advertising isn't as effective as it once was to the consumer who is so well entrenched in the Asupol ecosystem of way or way of communicating?
So for us, it hasn't been a matter of the customers moving from this channel to that channel. We've kind of said, where are all of our customers, right? Because we respect that we don't have one customer. We have millions of customers. And we want to be everywhere that they are. So we haven't looked at the channels and of our advertising strategy in a, this is where the future is. We kind of went, we are going to be everywhere our customers are. So we are on TV, which is exactly where the Asupol brand was predominantly. They also were predominant on the out of home space. And they're also very predominant in being in a lot of the community based events, activities. And so we've kind of let that stay true. So we've kept that. And so we are on TV now for, under one brand umbrella. So we are on TV. We also have deepened our out of home. But we've also overlaid that with the future of advertising, which is streaming, which is digital out of home. It's social media. So we've actually increased the number of channels that we play on, so that we meet all of our customers everywhere that they are. So us, it's a matter of how do we bring that dominance to life? And so we're wanting to do that through the advertising channels. You know, and as we speak of dominance, we all know marketing's budget is never allowing to be dominant. So we're all trying, you know. So if my bosses watch this, they're welcome to give me more budget so that I can be even more dominant.
But no. We also whisper to bosses, by the way. We're the boss whisperers here.
Exactly. It's not cheap to be dominant, and dominance requires presence. It requires you to be above the line. It actually requires you to be through the line, which is our our strategy is to make sure that we are on the spaces that Asupol used to be. So all of the traditional channels, we're making sure that we cover that. We're also looking at all of our younger customers, because we want to hunt now. We want to go get the younger customers. We want our brand to be excitable to them. So we've overlaid all of the exciting new channels, you know, your TikTok, which actually happens to be one of our best performing channels. And then we've also kept true to the things that we also work for us, which is the work sites that we access, the community events that we join, making sure that our brand is present in the things that matter to those communities as well, whether it be sport, whether it be events, whether it be infrastructural requirements or intervention. We've done all of that. And so it is a very ambitious task with one small marketing team to be able to do and galvanize all of that. But we're not going to stop. We're going to keep going because we believe in the strategy, and we are intentional about making sure that our brand is seen in the communities that we serve. And so we're going to continue to fight with our boards and finance to make sure that marketing.
And I think that intentionality, that intentionality is I suppose where it's at. So we've had Seth Godin here on the show, and one of the things he mentioned was that the bar for creativity is shifting, sometimes lower, sometimes higher. Lower in the sense of sometimes very little creativity gets you the results that you want. Sometimes it's higher in the sense that you have to be a lot more creative to win people's attention because we are so attention starved and there's so much media to consume. How do you decide whether creative work is genuinely building value or simply giving you vanity, or is simply just chasing vanity metrics, as we sometimes do, or at least as sometimes marketing tends to? How do you know that it's building value or it's just for vanity metrics? And how do you avoid chasing the vanity metrics?
So I think for us, it's really been about because we're intentional about making sure that our customers feel seen, we've allowed our creativity, our creativity to guide us in that sense. So we're wanting to tell stories that are reminiscent of the communities and the journeys that we've all worked on. And for us, that creativity is enough, because that is a reflection of the communities we serve. It's also a reflection of the communities we come from. The South African stories are beautiful and creative enough, you know, so we're also not trying to reinvent the wheel. So we're not trying to be the coolest, funnest, funkiest brand. We're trying to be a brand that our customers can see themselves in. And we've challenged our creative teams to make sure that that's the bar that they chase. It must look like the families you come from. It must look like the customers that we serve. And for us, that is the bar. We don't want to create amazing creativity that actually removes us from the communities that we serve. But we also want to treat the communities that we serve with the respect and the fun and the beauty that they come with. There's a lot of stories and creative stories that come out of our communities, and that's actually our bar. We are taking it back to the communities that we serve, and we want to start seeing stories that are reflective of that. And so I wouldn't say it's going to be a high or a low bar. Our standard does it look like our customers? Does it look like your family members? And if it doesn't, then we haven't hit the mark.
Yeah, and I think that's sometimes I suppose some work misses it, and the work that does miss it tends to get criticized for missing that mark, because we tend to, I suppose, want to make it beautiful for the sake of it being beautiful or looking pretty or seeming creative, while it removes the people that it's kind of talking to. That said, we find time and time again, I mean, I mentioned how the CX report finds that the financial services performs better in terms of its customer experience and has more customer experience professionals on the field in the organizations themselves in comparison to other sectors out there. So you use customer insights quite a lot within this space. How well is Africa keeping up with global markets in understanding and anticipating consumer needs?
I would say it's not a matter of global standards. It's a matter of meeting your customers where they are. And I don't want to use global standards and think that is the standard, because South Africa is such a diverse market. And South Africans can on some ends be very, very kind. And on other sides, they can be very, very tough. You know, so I find that the benchmark that I want to meet is our customers, and it's also our market, because we have we have such a rich and diverse landscape. We have very different communities. We have very different income bands. We have different cultures. And so we actually should be the standard, because the way that we deliver customer experience is not the same in Sandton than it is KwaMashu. And that should tell you that you need to be dynamic. You need to be responsive. Yeah. And you need to meet your customers where they are, on the channels that they are, because where I think we are challenged is the consistency. Because we have branch, we have call center, we have digital solutions, app, web, WhatsApp, social media. It's around keeping a consistent experience across your channels. That's where the real challenge is. But also, I would say, don't try to keep the consistency on that channel. Be true to that channel. And what I mean by that is, on WhatsApp, there's a desire for instantaneous response. Quick, fast, I'm on the move. Whereas in branch, specifically for us, when a customer comes in branch, they've just had something catastrophic happen, right? They're usually coming in to claim for their funeral cover because a death has happened in their family. That's not supposed to be fast. That's supposed to be sympathetic. That's supposed to have a lot of empathy. That's supposed to have a lot of room to allow you to feel safe, to feel cared for, to feel seen. And so we don't have the same SLA on WhatsApp that we have in branch, because the experience on those two channels is different. We've also noticed that the questions on WhatsApp and the questions that are asked in branch are very different. So the client who's asking a question on WhatsApp is usually asking for how far the claim is, just to manage the expectation. They also want to know when their next cashback is due. Whereas when a client comes to branch, it's usually because they want to lodge a claim for the first time because a death has happened and they actually don't know where to go. I mean, they didn't know where to start. We also realize that when a client calls into the call center, they've already waited a bit of time, and that they're going to get to the call, to a call center agent, and they're going to have to narrate why they're calling. And it's usually because someone in their family has just passed, which means they're going to be re-traumatized in that experience. We're also not trying to make our call center agents move quickly and say, okay, thanks, can I have the ID number? It's to recognize this moment, be empathetic, show up, and just carry that customer in that moment. And so I think we kind of need to look at customer experience very much from the customer's perspective. Why are they engaging with you? And then match your channel to that.
If you're enjoying The Lead Creative, please share this episode with your network and hit follow or subscribe. Enjoy the show.
That's interesting, because I worked in a call center in a past life. And I remember that at the time, a win or a measurement that was really put in place was the measurement of call volume and call time, average call time. Those were the things that mattered when it came time for promotions, it came time for bonuses, it came time for all sorts of perks that you get. And from what you are telling me is, or at least if I'm understanding it correctly, is that those metrics don't matter as much as, I suppose, maintaining the relationship with the customer. How then do you communicate that to a call center agent who is measured against how quickly you wrap up a call and how many calls you take in a day?
All right. So I think we're wanting to use our IVR system quite intentionally, right? So, for example, you know, a client is able to tell us why they're calling. So the team that is calling in, the team that handles our claims are held to a different standard around their call time and their first call resolution, etc., in comparison to a client who's calling in to find out when their next cashback is, to change their banking details. So efficiency can show up in different ways in the call center. So that's, I think, one of the things that are still going to allow that the right measurements are being held to the right team. So if someone's calling in for banking, for a statement, for things, we also want to encourage self-service, right? So that the right channels are being used correctly, because you should be able to generate your own statement yourself. So we will help you quickly, because while we're there generating your statement, we're going to tell you that the next time you can do it on this channel. And that's kind of how we are trying to weave in all of our channels, so that our customers start to know more about the channels that are available. We also realize that a lot of our customers, especially in the outskirts, will travel all the way to the branch just to get a statement or just to ask us a query. But we also realize that they do a lot of things in that time as well. So we're also not trying to move them away from the branches, because for some of them, they go to town and it's a full excursion, because they're going to do all of the financial things, going to do their groceries and. So we've also equipped our branch consultants to be able to help those clients efficiently, so that for some people, they want to come to the branch, but their experience in the branch shouldn't be long. So we've also started to introduce hosts, that can also direct you quickly to which consultant will be good at what. And that's also going to help the experience that you have, because essentially, nonke nyangena, nonke niwilain, regardless of the query that you're there for.
Yeah.
But
essentially, just a quick one, I think. Yeah. On that, there's, I feel like that's where I suppose technologies such as AI can really help as well, right? Because it could be infused or at least be part of the IVR process to help assist the customer when they land at that space. So many iconic brands were built over time and with consistent brand building. Today, there seems to be a lot of pressure for short-term wins. There seems to be budgetary constraints that lead marketers to having these short-term wins instead of the long-term brand building that is required to be top of mind. I mean, you when we started, or at least earlier on, you mentioned that both Sanlam and Asupol are heritage brands that have been around for a long time, which means there would have had to have been consistent brand building. Unlike it seems now, where there are so many quick wins that are being chased. Why do you think this shift is happening? And what is the role of marketers in ensuring that sustained brand growth?
I think the short-term wins is just, it's literally just the economy that we play in, the competitiveness. Because if we look at insurers previously, we knew who our competitor was, and it was the traditional insurers. You're getting competition from the banks, you're getting competition from the telcos, because the banks are now becoming bank assurers, the telcos are becoming insurers as well, because they also have licenses. And then you're also getting competition from the retailers, who are also able to sell funeral cover from the comfort of their tills. So it's the shift in wanting the short-term wins is because the landscape is completely shifted in terms of who your competitor is. I mean, I think that's the business pressure that's coming up to the fore. I think as marketers, it's important to not make a choice between the two. For me, it's never been short-term wins or the long-term goals. It's both.
Right.
So the challenge is, how do you invest in both, and how do you give attention to both? And so for me, I'm going to give you a little bit of short-term wins because I'm buying some emotional trust from you as a business and as an executive team, because these are the things that are going to set us up for the long term. And it's important to remind the business that if we don't invest in the long term, we become a business that will no longer be relevant, right? And there's a lot of examples. You have Nokia, BlackBerry, you have Kodak, who weren't, you know, so there's a lot of examples you can look at when you're only focused on the long term. But there's also a lot of examples if you're only focused on the short term. So it's a matter of making sure that there's a balance of both and fighting for both. Because if you're saying, I am giving you the short term wins, so why aren't you giving me the long term? What's the real reason you're not giving me the long term? It's important to be able to challenge and to fight for the things that do matter. Because if you're saying we are delivering on the short term, but we also need to deliver on the long term, it's almost like, what's the real reason that we're actually pushing back to marketing? And I think once you pour into that emotional bank of getting, or like I like to say, stakeholders that are on your side, allies, you know, so the short terms help you get many allies, and those are the allies you use when you want to push your long term ambitions and goals. So never sacrifice. Yes, your attention might be on the short term for now. And once you start to see those wins, use that high to get the long term goals that you want, that are going to allow you to continue to do the brand building work, that don't have the short term goals that you need. Because it's like, guys, we need to do this huge brand campaign that's going to take a lot of effort and time, but the product sales are coming through. The product sales are coming through. We're making sure that we are pivoting. We are quick. We are dynamic. All of those things. If you're always reminding people that it's not an this or that, it's a this and that conversation,
Then they're a lot
more amenable.
Yeah. So you are a judge at this year's Effies, which means, of course, you are looking at creative effectiveness. You're looking at marketing effectiveness at that level. At a personal level, how do you measure marketing and creative effectiveness? And why do you think it's important for the industry's future?
The Effies this year was really, really great. And I really enjoyed marking the work. So congratulations to all the agencies and the brands that participated. Personally, the easiest way to measure marketing success, which might go a little bit against what I was saying earlier, is I think marketers underestimate the value that they bring to the business numbers. And we speak a lot about the vanity KPIs. And it's important to make friends with the data intelligence team, with the actuaries if you're in insurance, with the accountants if you're in banking, or the investment analyst if you're in those industries. But your intelligence team are your friends, because there is no success without marketing. But we speak about things, and I want to say it in a nice way, we downplay the success of marketing by talking about the vanity numbers. The impressions were amazing. I mean, everyone spoke about the amazing impressions, the clicks, and. But I think what people need to always include is the impact to the business. What did it do for the sales? What did it do for retention? What did it do? And even if the retention numbers are low, that's marketing. It means we're not losing as many customers. And that's also success. And so I think we must invest in making sure that the numbers go all the way through to the business impact, because that secures your seat at the table. That shows the value of marketing. And that becomes your success that you can use for the rest of your life. So when you want to do the next campaign, you say, can I remind you of how awesome we were just last month? And so I think that we challenge a lot of the agencies on the vanity KPIs, and I think the agencies should challenge the businesses back and say, can you put us in contact with your data analyst teams and your actuaries, etc., so we can actually track the true success of these campaigns, because the absence of these campaigns would impact the business tremendously. But the presence of these campaigns, people forget it's because of the amazing work that marketing does. And we must never let them forget that.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it sounds to me as though you come out of this judging process as well with a, I suppose, with a different perspective on how you prove marketing effectiveness. How does that change now your approach to what you communicate as the successes of marketing coming out of this process of judging the Effies?
I mean, the nice thing about judging the Effies, I was judging it and I was from a business perspective, and I could see a lot of the work, what value it would have given to the business. And I almost was, so I started challenging my own marketing team to say, guys, I expect you now to start getting the sales numbers on a monthly basis and do a trend analysis. So we have an analyst in our marketing team that gives us the reporting on a monthly basis. So we're able to track the marketing campaigns and the impact it has on the business. We're also able to track the CX efforts, because the CX team also falls under my jurisdiction. We're able to track all of the CX implementations on what it does for the CSAT score, what it does for the NPS score, what it does for the complaints. So we're tracking everything. So it's important that businesses make sure that they have reporting that sits in their own divisions, but also make the reporting guys friends. So the reporting guys must be very friendly with the intelligence and analyst guys, as well as close to all of the marketing work. So when are all of these campaigns going out? What is the messaging? What are the shifts? Because they're able to connect all the dots for you. And then we just give all our intentions to give all of that data to our agencies as well, so that when they enter these amazing awards, they can also attribute all of the campaigns that they know that they've gone live with. So it's about an intentionality upfront around wanting to be able to report on the success of marketing at a business KPI level. And if you start upfront investing in the reporting and making sure that the infrastructure is in place, the thinking is in place, then the rest comes afterwards. And so the Effies for me, judging it this year, was kind of like a reminder that that move was the right move, because I could see all the potential of all of that success that could have been attributed to the business success. And I think that actually will make a lot of agencies show the impact and success of their work in comparison to their counterparts. So where the agencies can challenge the business to be able to show you those numbers.
Mandisa, I think we've come to the end of our conversation, and we usually have a question that our previous guest leaves for our next guest. And so think of this as our previous guest passing the mic to you. And one of our previous guests was Sydney Mbele, Absa Group's Group Chief Marketing and Corporate Affairs Officer. The question he left for you was, and I quote, "One of the questions, and I know it's a conversation that's been at play for a very long time, but one of the questions that keep me awake is this notion of measurement, because that builds credibility," he says. So what is your take on what the next frontier is as far as marketing measurement is concerned?
I think we need to break down the way we see measurement and incorporate some of the business KPIs. And we mustn't be shy to incorporate it. But we must also, because it's a double-edged sword, because we don't want to be held to the ROI as well, because then some of the things don't have an immediate impact. But don't be shy to include the business measurements in a marketing landscape. Don't be afraid to include the cost of acquisition, the cost of reach. Those things keep you honest. Those things also help you challenge the business on what it costs to create the value that you create. So it's not a matter of marketing is held to this standard of delivery. It is marketing needs this level of support in order to be able to deliver the value that the business wants. So that's a bit of the double-edged sword that I would say needs to change. And when we look at measurement, is actually look at the marketing as a business as well, and trust that it drives and contributes to the value and the success that the business has. You know, we talk about how many sales, and we thank the sales team, but marketing must also take a little bit of that shine. I mean, don't be afraid to go and take it, because it won't always be given.
Mandisa, now it's your turn to pass the mic to our next guest with a question that you leave. So what's the one question that you'd ask our next guest about their work, their creative process, or thoughts about the industry or life for that matter?
So for me, the thing that keeps me up at night, that shapes the decisions that we make, is what are the things that I am doing to better serve the communities that we work in and that we serve and that we sell to? So that would be the question I would leave to the next person, so that we know that we're
how
leaving
do we improve the lives of the communities we serve?
Yes, yeah. So that we know that we're leaving the communities better when we leave than when we came.
Great question. Thank you so much, Mandisa. That was a great conversation.
Thank you for listening to The Lead Creative. Did you get one insight that's worth sharing from this episode? Please share it with your network or your friends. Pop me some of your ideas and innovative finds on Twitter on @Mongezi. This podcast is available on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, Google, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also find me on mongezi.com.